Today I want to talk about a new way to view your parents. Everyone has biological parents, and many people today have step-parents. Everyone has a relationship to those parents. I was looking out my window at my young avocado tree the other day. Parents are like the roots of that tree, providing for its growth and its productivity and its stability. My late wife, Marianne, established a winery in Sonoma, California. She taught me about wine, grapes, and grapevines, and more. I learned that some vines that are more fruit-productive are grafted onto root vines, called rootstock, that are hardier and more disease-resistant. Using my experiences in life, I realized that just because a person can bear fruit is not necessarily evidence that they can care for or raise the fruit to maturity. And fruit, in that case, would be in parentheses or in quotes and would represent children. Nor is the presence of a step-parent conclusive evidence of a parental disadvantage being foisted upon a child. In some cases, that step-parent is a lifesaver versus the biological parent. Thinking, seeking people, recognize the power of perceptions. Perceptions tell us what reality is, and even those perceptions, when they're inaccurate, will try to convince us that this is reality. I used to say, only half-jokingly, that if a parent didn't kill you by the time you were 16, they can be considered to have done a good job. That saying was based upon my opinion that we often had unfair expectation of our parents, especially those of us who were exposed to the television shows of Ozzie and Harriet, Leave It to Beaver, The Donna Reed Show, The Brady Bunch, and others. My parents were not like those TV parents. Yours probably weren't either. As a parent, I wasn't either. If, as I believe, the solution to all problems is increased awareness, I guess the cause of all problems is decreased awareness. As a young parent, my decreased awareness was awful. What makes it worse is that decreased awareness people, myself included, can view efforts to increase awareness as threats or too difficult to make it happen. Before, I tended to think of parents as babysitters or adoptive parents whose job it is keep us alive long enough until we are old enough to start searching for our spiritual parents, our source of being. Now, because I appreciate the reality that the divine works in us, for us, and through us, to meet our needs and the needs of other people and other life forms, I'm striving to understand and experience how that happens. There are so many things I love in the book Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. I love the description of God that Jesus becomes aware of in the desert after being baptized by John in the Jordan River. When he realizes that God is not the powerful man God taught by the rabbis in the temple, possessed by human traits of favoritism, wrath, judgmentalism, and a great desire for obedience and a willingness to punish disobedience, he is thrilled in relief. In contrast to this superstition-driven myth, Jesus, now the Christ, understands God as a creative, loving, intelligent power, working only in love for the well-being of its creations through certain observable processes that are undeniable. That means you can see these processes in your life, and so can I. So, here we are with highly conscious, that is, highly aware, cells in our bodies doing the work trying to keep us healthy. The divine intelligence supports our growth on all levels. Our nutrition and nourishment, our healing and repair, our protection, our fulfillment of need, our work, survival, all affected by patterns of rhythm governed by the law of cause and effect. You may be saying, okay, so now tell me how to get a new way to view my parents. And I say, fine. Neither you nor I have directly seen God, but we have seen people through whom divine consciousness has worked for our well-being. Our parents are usually the primary distributor of divine love, since they were involved in our conception, our birth, and early upbringing. Get your mind around this fact. In the process of learning, our teachers, you can think parents and step-parents, our teachers would have at times taught us how to do it, and at other times they would have modeled how not to do it. We would have learned that we wanted to emulate certain behaviors that they demonstrated to us in our own lives in the future, and we would have wanted to avoid replicating other behaviors and attitudes that they demonstrated to us in our early lives. Look at growth on the individual level. First, let's look at the spiritual level, then the mental, the emotional, and the physical level. Growth is divinely designed. Growth is also facilitated. It is the growth facilitated by your parents that I want us to focus on. Let me repeat. The divine, creative, loving, intelligent power works for all of us, in all of us, and through all of us, to the extent that our individual consciousnesses allow it to do its work. How much did your parents allow divine love to flow to and through them? I don't know. But we probably can agree that it wasn't enough. Rather than focus on what we may perceive as their failings, let's make an effort to see their influences that contributed to our spiritual growth, our mental growth, our emotional growth, and our physical growth. Here's an example. My father wanted to be a college professor, but after graduating from law school, his father insisted that he work as an attorney. My father was an unhappy attorney, but an excellent teacher. He could explain things so even a kid could understand them. Somehow, he recognized and accepted an unruly, "Don't tell me what to do or think," streak in me. He never tried to break my spirit, as I suspect his father did to him. My father owned a Volkswagen Bug, one of the first to come out. In those days, the color choices consisted of black. That car didn't even have a gas gauge. I was 12 years old, and he insisted that I learn how to drive the stick shift car. I didn't want to. I felt it was more than I could handle. No matter. He made it happen, and in retrospect, I am glad he forced me to grow. During one or more of these driving sessions, he would be drinking alcohol from a bottle. When he started to tell me about the value of making up your own prayers, I felt sure we would be hit by lightning as I was driving the car around remote parking lots. I thought, you can only recite the prayers as defined by the catechism in Catholicism. My father taught me this limitation was nonsense, and those prayers were usually insincerely spoken because they were memorized and had almost no heartfelt value to them. Years later, I was glad to have the openness to pray, not in the set prayers established by Catholicism. It is even more interesting to me to read in Christ Returns Reveal Startling Truth that Christ spoke no set prayers when it was time to be involved in the healing of others, but he spoke sincerely, knowing that he would be heard by divine consciousness, the Father, and he would be an effective conduit because of his trust and openness. Both of my parents loved sports, particularly baseball. They encouraged, supported, played catch, and watched us play. In the spring and summer, when three newspapers were delivered to the house, I would go to the sports pages first and then read the rest of the papers. My father had an office at home as well as an office out of the home. We had bookshelves filled with law books, encyclopedias, dictionaries, fiction and nonfiction in large quantities. It interested me to know that my siblings and myself had home offices with massive bookshelves housing books of a lot of genres. There is no question of how we came to view this as natural and normal. We owe that to my parents. I was a six-year-old first grader when I attended catechism class for the first time. Catholic kids in the afternoon, I think it was a Monday, we would be told at 2:30 that we could put our coats on and get ready to walk the block and a half to the church. And there in the church hall, we would receive instruction on how to be good Catholics. During that class, a laywoman teacher told us that all of our friends who weren't Catholic were going to hell when they died. I was crying when I got home that day, and my mother, a registered nurse who worked the night shift, asked me why I was crying. When I told her, she replied, "That's nonsense. That is not true. You don't have to worry about your friends. They will be okay." My mother then put on her coat, marched down to the church. She told the priest if anyone ever tried to teach her children such nonsense, they would never see another Costello in church, ever. My mother protected me and my siblings. She helped my mental growth by pointing out that adults make proclamations about God and other things that they know nothing about. If I hadn't already been a doubting Thomas, I became one after this event. Early in my life, my parents, especially my mother, discerned that I had a love of and a facility for words. Both parents were educated, so it wasn't a stretch for her to buy me a book, recommend books that she had read, and later on suggest books about spirituality and metaphysics. My mother, along with two of my four sisters, taught me automatic writing that convinced me of a benevolent, loving power behind creation. That reassurance in July of 1969 certainly was as if I was giving a special sense of gravity that not many people were so fortunate to have. I could trust because I had experienced something that few people had. Maybe almost nobody my age. Here's the main reason I think developing new viewpoints about your parents is so important. If you reject your roots, you are cutting yourself off from the valuable energy of your ancestors' experiences and knowledge. A living plant without roots is less likely to thrive or survive, and more likely to die miserably. Our parents, yours and mine, facilitated the flow of divine energy to us. As I mentioned, our parents' awareness was the key determinant as to how open the faucet was in this process. If you, as I'm suggesting, will look at each of the ways divine consciousness cares for our well-being and seek to become aware of the examples of your parents aligning directly with or directly against these flows, you will have a shift in your view of your parents. I further believe in regard to all energy exchange experiences that if we look deeply enough, we will find good, we will find God in them. What actions or inactions did your parents take that resulted in your spiritual growth? That's easy for me to see. Your mental growth? That's easy for me to see. Your emotional growth? That's easy for me to see. And your physical growth? That's easy for me to see. As you begin to scan your life seeking to identify these events, you will lessen your habits of rejecting and you'll move into bonding. Bonding, in this way, is healthier. What actions or inactions did your parents take that resulted in your nutrition, in your nourishment, in your nurturing? And you could look and see what they did or what they didn't do, what you want to replicate or what you don't want to replicate, as a way to understand and notice how you've lived your life and how you can change and live it going forward if you're unhappy with what you've selected to emulate. It's easy and, frankly, it's fun to think back to the foods that were favored in your family. I bet these preferences still influence your eating today. My mother had a full-time nursing job, seven children, and a husband who wasn't much help. It's no wonder that cooking, housekeeping, and similar chores weren't considered to be rewarding by her. She loved to read, think, and challenge her mind. Being a slave in a domestic family environment wasn't a pleasure for her. Certain foods and meals that she prepared are as clear to me today as they were when she prepared them more than 50 years ago. Lemon meringue pies, molasses cookie, roast loin of pork, coleslaw. Oh, that coleslaw, that's not how my mother made it. That's not right. You gotta change that recipe. Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners, with all the fixings, still make me smile with contentment. As I said, my mother was a registered nurse. As a boy growing up, I wondered how other kids survived their behaviors without having a mother at home who were nurses. I knew I was incredibly fortunate to have a ready-made emergency room in my home, usually the kitchen, where triage would take place. My mother's demeanor in the face of bleeding and bloody children was the utmost calm and precise steps to take over and to correct the situation. In all of our experiences of this type, except one, I turned myself over to my mother's complete authoritative control and was pacified. The one experience where I was inconsolable was when I got an infection due to a botched appendectomy by a surgeon with a well-known drinking problem. I screamed, ranted, and cried about the need for a second operation. I couldn't hear anything my mother said. I was so angry and so afraid. As it turned out, my parents took me to our family doctor, not the surgeon, who asked me to lie down so he could look at my incision. He asked me to sit up and offered me the chance to cut two or three stitches from the incision. I was a little surprised, but I said, yeah, okay. I did that, and then he asked me to lie down again. He gently pressed on my abdomen around that area where the stitches were removed, and the most disgusting-smelling pus came out. What a smell! Yuck! And what a simple process. How completely unnecessary were my histrionics. And I know that my ranting and screaming and crying terrified my younger sister and my younger brother. You can look at protection your parents provided. If you had a roof over your head and clothing on your body, those are simple enough examples of protection. How else did your parents protect you from danger? Did you have a curfew, perhaps? My mother protected me from a sexual predator. She stood up for me with teachers. She defended me from nonsensical religious dogma that would have been terrified if I was left to believe it. She protected my curiosity and my desire to explore ideas. My family lived in a small village where everybody knew everybody else. Everyone in my family looked alike, so there was no disputing that we were Costellos. We were recognizable from a long distance. We were doubly protected. One way is that since we were easily identified, even from a distance, we couldn't really become criminals. Costello did that. You didn't have to do that very many times before you realized, oh, that's my career as a bad boy has got to come to an end. Second way we were protected is because of my parents' status. People didn't mess with us. As I said before, if you look deeply enough at a situation, you can discover the good in it. A mentor from San Diego used a formula of gift, giver, value to help discover the good in a situation. This process also helps overcoming a common human failing of denying the gift and denying the giver. You've heard it when somebody gives you a compliment. Oh, well, you know, it was nothing. Oh, that's an old blouse, or that's an old tie or shirt. Or we deny the gift and we deny the giver. And, of course, through these denials, the value is never recognized. When not allowing ourselves to take in the energy of these exchanges. Did your parents fulfill your needs? I will answer for you. Yes, they did. Did they fulfill your needs and wants in the ways you wanted? No way. No. And It is in those no events that we can really look more deeply for the value. It's obvious that a child would be ruined if every one of their desires were to be immediately fulfilled. They would become little monsters. There would be very little self-development for that child. And they would be the creation of a terrible tyrant or worse. I had times when I wanted my mother to buy me two pairs of shoes. She said I could have one pair. I chose. When it came time to go to a Girl Scout dance, I had the inappropriate shoes. I resumed my asking. That turned into pleading. She didn't relent. I went to the dance with the inappropriate shoes and felt incredibly self-conscious, even though my very kind date said, "It didn't matter. Relax. Let's enjoy this." Some decisions are either or and not both. Learning that lesson makes a person a better decision maker. My father, talking about work, helped me get a job. At 16, when I came home from Boston, where I had been staying with my sister Patty, hoping to get a job in the Boston area. But I couldn't find one. There were so many people applying for the jobs that I did, all older and more capable than I was, so I returned home. That summer, my father got me a job that prepared me for the next job that I started working at when school resumed. And I worked throughout high school in that job, and I worked that job a couple of years into college. Having that high school job was so important to me, my development, my mental health, my self-image, my income, of course. And even before that, my father got me a job when I was 12 years old, working at a soda manufacturing line with a man who, by himself, manufactured soda. This was a local store, maybe two blocks away from where I lived. But this man, Manuel Gloria, was a man that my father worked for and with when he was a late teen, early 20s, and they hauled ice, blocks of ice, to businesses and to homes, to ice boxes, before refrigeration was a common technological advance for most people. At 14, my mother drove me to a job I had painting a house by myself. She would drop me off early in the morning, and at the end of the day, the wife of the homeowner would drive me home. Being encouraged to work and help to find and get to work is one of the greatest gifts my parents or any parent could give to a young person. I understood survival. My home was not like Ozzie and Harriet's. I remember thinking as I walked to school one day at about 16 years old that while I wouldn't wish my life on anyone else and probably wouldn't want to repeat it, I did believe that what I had experienced would have tremendous survival value later in my life. It was as if I believed I had already taken classes in the College of Hard Knocks, did well, and it would prepare me for any hard knocks that I would face in the future. Whereas somebody who was raised maybe in a more benign and gentler environment would not have the self-protective skills or the processing ability to survive those. Because my parents chose to live and raise a family in a small seaport farming village, I knew about high tides and low tides. For swimming and fishing, I wanted high tides. For clamming and crabbing, I wanted low tides. When I would go to the earliest mass on Sunday mornings, take my bamboo fishing pole on my bike, ride to the bait shops for bait, and then to the main public dock to fish, I was having an idyllic Tom Sawyer-type summer day. I would be the only kid fishing. I was 10 or 11 years old. I kept the fish I wanted, gave away edible but not desirable fish according to my mother's standards, and I threw back the useless fish. After I rode home with my catch, I would clean the fish, hand them over to my mother, who would then cook them for my lunch, and then I would take a nap. What kid wouldn't love this arrangement? Independence, support, camaraderie with older people fishing, loving kindness back at home. I certainly didn't understand rhythm as it pertained to the needs and desires, nor did I understand the law of cause and effect. Those two concepts were not taught to me, or, if they were, I didn't learn them. When I look at religion, obedience is taught through threats. Threats of hell, threats of punishment. But the law of cause and effect would have led to a greater awareness, which I see as the solution to every problem. This brings me back to the topic of today's talk, a new way to view your parents. If through the steps I am suggesting, you let go of rejection and increase the bonding with your parents, you open your heart, your mind, and your body, and the cells of your body, to greater blessings because you now have taken the time to connect to them. We are blessed and we are supported, and our growth and our blessings are supported and have been all along by our biological and step-parents as well as our spiritual parents. Listen for the promise of that in the prayer that follows. In the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns reveals startling truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.